And welcome to the Renaissance Tapes. It's a very special edition of the Renaissance Tapes this evening. We're sitting with Arlo Guthrie of, I am not worthy. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Wow, so many great things. Americana music's in Nashville. That's why we're doing these Renaissance Tapes. And to be in the midst of one of the reasons Americana music is Americana music, the family and the whole thing, it's wow.
Well, thanks. Well, I don't know what to say about all that.
Well, you know, I know you've got some favorite tales of going through things in Americana music. I mean, because I remember, gosh, you played Woodstock.
Well,
the difference between Woodstock today and as far as the Torch of Americana goes.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. First of all, I'm not even sure what it means. To me, you know, there's only two kinds of music. There's the kind you learn from other people and the kind you go to school for. So the kind you learn from other people, to me, we always just called folk music. That's the kind that you either listen to a record or you go to see a show or you meet some guy and you say, hey, how you doing that? And he shows you. And or you figure it out, you slow down the record, or I don't know what you do with CDs, but somehow or other you learn it, you know, just by listening. And that's, to me, was always folk music. The other kind's classical music. You got to go to school for that. You got to learn to read and write and do all that, and that's fine too. I don't have any problem with it. But all these other categories scare the hell out of me. I don't know what they mean. I don't know where to find it. I don't know how to spell half of it. And so it's confusing, but the kind of music that I was hearing like the other night, I thought reminded me of what folk music was all about. It was the kind of, it didn't have a lot of glitter to it. There wasn't a lot of glamour associated with it. Few people got dressed up for it. And it sounded like regular people. And so I appreciated being able to participate in an event like that and the kind of music that just regular people are making. There are some fabulous musicians these days. There are some good songwriters and stuff like that. And so if that's what Americana music is, well, that's fine with me. I think we saw probably a limited version of it represented at the event here, because to me it would include the blues and bluegrass and you know, all of the traditional stuff. And it's hard to fathom how a song or an artist or a record is somehow more important than another one. And so the award feature of this kind of stuff scares the hell out of me too. I'm not a big fan of it. But on the other hand, how do you recognize somebody who's doing good? And so we have these silly kind of events where somebody opens an envelope, or we got to drop the envelope thing. That's just even open them the other night, let alone read them. And so there are some of the features of this event that are cut the wrong way with me, I guess, right? You could say, but so what, you know, I'll get over it. It was nice to see some old friends. It was nice to hang out and hanging out with Guy and some of the other folks, and I'm trying to remember everybody's name who was there, but it was a that's the best thing about these things. Now, I don't know about you guys up here in the Renaissance part of the world, but for me, hanging out with some of these guys backstage is what made the whole thing worth it, because that's the only time you get to catch up with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And hanging out with Guy Clark and those guys, you know, it was just a hell of a lot of fun. And it's like, what have you been doing since I saw you, which was 4 or 5 years ago, right? Something like that. How many more kids you got, who you married to now, whatever, you know. And so that to me is the best feature of any of these kinds of things. And and I guess talking to you guys and, you know, yeah, getting the word out. And let, you know, a lot of people, they see my name or something, they say, gee, I thought that guy was dead, you know. And and I don't blame them. How would you know?
Well, you've been riding a motorcycle and enjoying yourself for
I have
a while now, haven't you?
I have. Well, we can't talk about that. The wife gets pissed off.
We don't want to have that.
That's what I'm saying.
The new album, Live in Sydney, it is an awesome effort. It's a live record, but it's bringing back some things and some focuses that have kind of been swept away in some places.
Well, I always liked doing some of the old songs. You know, you get carried away with feeling as if you got to produce new stuff all the time. But sometimes, I mean, when I was a kid, I would go to hear these old guys. Guys like Cisco Houston, guys like Mississippi John Hurt, Sonny Terry, Brownie McGee, you know, and they would sing these old songs. And I could hear them over and over and over, night after night, year after year. I didn't need to hear them write new things.
Right.
I just wanted to be there and see what little new thing they were doing to something that they were doing the same. Because you can't really do it the same, you know. And somehow that gives you a taste of, I guess really is who that guy is. That's the whole point of I think, singing songs, or is that if you get to know who somebody is through whatever work they're doing, whether they're writing songs, riding horses or whatever, you've made a friend.
That's the significance of the pickle, am I right?
Well, it could be. I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. But you know what I'm saying. I remember, you know, when I think of the people that influenced my life, even I think about like the Beatles or something like that, and the first thing that comes to my mind is not the songs they wrote, not the clothes they were wearing, not the shows that they did, but the little things they, you know, when they'd get off the plane and say something funny that would just, you know, put a big smile on your face. Those are the kind, it's because I got to know them through their work and through their life that I felt like somebody was putting a smile on my face because there was somebody else who shared some kind of value that in a way that could only happen if I wasn't going to move next door or something like that. How would I get to know them? I'd get to know them through seeing them in these places under these circumstances that were so absurd and funny that they, or Bob Dylan, or you know, people like that. That it's the little quotes that I think of. I remember some time ago somebody asked Bob Dylan, you know, do you write songs to sell soap? And he said, no, we don't even use soap. Now, okay, maybe it's not that funny, but I remember it. Because at that time when he was saying that, everybody was saying, oh, those hippies, they don't get washed or whatever,
right.
You know. And so it was a comment on the times, and I loved it. And so I'm not a big fan of glamour and production. I'll give you another example. I'm probably talking too much, but one time a few years ago, I went to the Grammy Awards.
Right.
And I saw probably the best production I ever saw in my life. I mean, the sound was unbelievable. In a lousy room. It was like the Staples something or other on the West Coast there.
Staples Center over
there. Yeah,
in LA.
Just horrible place. But it sounded great because they had, I mean, and the lights were fabulous and the outfits were just incredible and the choreography was stunning. And the only thing that it lacked was some kind of heart. There was nothing in it. It was all the money and all the talent had been put into glamorizing, to clothing, to choreographing, and all, you know, it had all been the shell. There was nothing there. It was vacant. It was empty. And I thought, oh, that's funny. That's the times we're living in. That's what's going on in politics. There's nobody home, but he's looking good, and he's lit well, and he sounds great, and if you didn't know better, you would think there was somebody there.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying? But that's true. But it's not just politics, it's everywhere. That's the world we're living in. So this event was a kind of fun thing because it didn't have all of that, and there were a lot of flaws, and people were, like me, was forgetting words to stuff, and so what? But the heart was there, and I appreciated seeing that, and I appreciated being a part of it.
So it ended up being a good thing.
It started out being a good thing. But it's under these...
mass production.
It's under these sort of strained circumstances that the good thing is.
Right.
But at least there's a good thing there.
There you go. Yeah. Wow. See, now I'm going to have to go think for days after this interview. I am. Thank you for so much.
Well, when I figure out how to spell Renaissance, you'll be able to come up with...
Oh my, coming into Los Angeles. That's one of my favorite songs I think you've ever done. Was that true life experiences back in those days? I mean, that was, you know.
My dad used to say you can only write what you know. and most of the stuff that I've wrote is stuff that was based on real stuff. Only because if you don't know it or don't got a glimpse into it, how are you gonna what would even put it in your mind? You know, something's got to do that. And so most of the songs, like, you know, when you're dealing with Alice's Restaurant and stuff like that, people thought I was making that stuff up, but all of that happened. It was all real.
Journey from Alice's Restaurant was the real thing.
Oh yeah, not only that, when we made the movie of it, the people that played themselves in the movie were the real guys. The cop in the movie, Officer Obie, was the real Officer Obie. He was playing himself.
Wow.
There was a blind judge in there, Judge Hannon. He was playing himself. These were not actors. Now, it happened to be a lousy movie, as far as I'm concerned, but the fun thing was that all of these people, back 40 years ago, or whatever it was, almost 40 now, were sort of reenacting in a spirit of friendliness. I remember this was a time when most people who were my age at the time, which is I was, you know, late teens, early 20s, were having trouble with figures in authority, whether they were political or social or whatever they were, whether they were in uniform, you know, local police or whatever, state cops. Everybody was, you know, hassling everybody else. It was just the time.
I remember.
And so here we were. We had really been arrested by this real guy. And... which was typical, it was nothing special about it, but he had a sense of humor about him, and he had a twinkle in his eye that I didn't know at the time. And so I started writing these funny tales about him and our encounters with him, and somebody decided to make a movie of it. So he gets the real guys. Now here we are, these adversarial sort of, in an adversarial format, you might say, and but we had to work together. And about 3 weeks into making the movie, he comes up to me, this big cop. He says, "Guthrie, you hippies can't be that bad. You're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning just like me, and you're working all day. Must be something to you." And he smiled, and we became great friends, and we were friends until he passed away some years ago. And I learned a big lesson, that sometimes, you know, you find yourself in a position where you're uncomfortable when something happens. You've made an enemy in some way or other, just by accident or whatever. But that's the very guy who turns out sometimes to be your best friend. And that's why the idiots who are running the countries now, around the world, not just ours, by the way, are making the mistake of cutting off the possibilities for our people who are enemies now to later become allies, because we might need these guys at some point or other.
Yeah.
Not only that, most of these guys were allies, they were our guys. Most of the guys we're fighting now, we put there.
Yeah.
And we funded.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I called the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back. just a half a mile from the railroad track, and you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago, it was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant, she lives in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Foch is a dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before, and with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile is better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obi, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obi for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obi could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obi, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And that's what we did, and sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car, but when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obi said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, "Kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obi, I can understand you wanting my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for?" And it said, "Kid, we don't want any hangings." Said, "Obi, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering?" Obi said he was making sure, and friends, Obi was, cause he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with a 27 8x10, covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, "All rise." We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with the CNI dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the CNI dog. Then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice, and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, "Kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, "Shrink, I want to kill. And I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. Kill, kill, kill!" And I started jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill!" And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill!" And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, set me down the hall, said, "You're our boy, and you feel too good about it." Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, "What do you want?" He said, "Kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested?" And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and 5-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, "Kid, did you ever go to court?" I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and stopped me right there and said, "Kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid!" And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you. if you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. And there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench there. Mother rapers. Father stabbers. Father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me. And one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage." He said, "What were you arrested for, kid?" And I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeballing all kinds of mean, nasty things till I said, "And creating a nuisance." And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and that kind of thing. Got to say, pretend to about the crime, want to know the rest of the officer's name, and that kind of thing. You got to say, and talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words: "Kid, you rehabilitated yourself." I went over to the sergeant and said, "Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug." He looked at me and said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, 'Shrink, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant,' and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and they won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. That was horrible. One end Warren stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four part harmony in the feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's restaurant.
I sort of jumped the subject here, and I didn't mean to, but the point is that sometimes life, if you live long enough, can surprise you. And I've been surprised, not just in the sort of politics of the times, but in the nature of the things that happens to everybody. And that's happened in coming into L.A. One time I was sitting in an airport when Clinton was president, and I was going overseas, and there were a couple of Secret Service guys sitting across from me in the airport. And they were going over to Europe, too, because Clinton was going over there to make a speech or something. And I could tell they were Secret Service. They had those ear things, and they were dressed like that, shiny shoes, everything. And they're glaring at me. And I'm thinking, oh, God, oh, what's going to happen? And what are they going to say? I could feel they were going to say something. And they're all like 6'7", you know? I mean, these are... And they all weigh 300 pounds, and you know they know karate or something.
Should have been playing in the NFL.
I was, well, they either were or could have, right? So all of a sudden, one of these guys comes up. He's standing there, comes walking over to me, and I'm going, oh God, all right. I thought this was over 30 years ago. He says, "Are you Guthrie?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "Guthrie, are you bringing in a couple of keys?" And he had this big smile, and I thought, whoa. And he started giving me Secret Service pins and Secret Service badges and Secret Service pins and whatever he had, giving me all this stuff, you know. And I thought, well, the times have changed.
They have.
They sure have. And some of these guys, and I learned that with Officer Obi 40 years ago, right, that some of these guys are regular guys just like everybody else. And if they have the heart and is in the right place, boy, you've got friends that you can count on or that you can make. And boy, we need more of that at this time. Don't you think?
Coming in from London, from over the pole, flying in a big airliner. Chicken flying everywhere around the plane. Could we ever feel much finer? Coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't
Don't touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Yeah, there's a guy with a ticket to Mexico. No, he couldn't look much stranger. Bags, if you please, Mr. Customs Man.
City of New Orleans is so an amazing track, and it
we can't lose the city.
We can't lose.
Well, we're not going to lose the city. I think, you know, the only thing that we'll be dealing with 10 years from now is who's living there. It might become so good a place to live that only people with a lot of money will be able to get there and build houses again and pay the taxes there and stuff like that. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to make a decision about the future of what's going to happen there. But, you know, there are other places in the world that have had similar disasters, and what typically happens is that everybody moves out, get all the regular folks out of there, and then the condos come in, and then, once they build it back up, they're going to make a lot of things a lot better.
That is what happened to Florida, huh?
Yeah. I know I'm building all them condos personally now.
Well, gosh.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning, America, how are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Do
card games with the old men in the club cars. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. And the sons of bowmen porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpets made of steel. And mothers with their babes asleep rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they feel. Good morning. City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans. Changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home. We'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream. And the steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again. Passengers will please refrain. This train got to disappear in railroad blues. Good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone when the day is done.
I guess that leaves you with a lot of work to do. It has been just an awesome experience sitting and having a conversation with the legend himself, Arlo Guthrie.
Listening.
Wow.
Yeah, I really do apologize. I have sort of probably talked more than I should have, but I haven't talked to anybody yet today, and the need was there.
Well, we are so glad to be able to fill that need. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks for listening
on the Renaissance Tapes.
Appreciate it.